hope now is I'll run that Imperial Garbage Scout. I'm going to Lightspeed. That's the spirit. You'll be celebrating Life Day before you know it.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The Forcecast.
Do the mashed potato, do the candied yam, do the funky turkey, cause it's time to jam. If you don't wanna dance, baby, that's alright. Do some non-stop shopping, work up an appetite. Make your Thanksgiving one long meal, cause the more you eat, the more grateful you are gonna feel.
The sound of the late, great Lou Rawls. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Forcecast Thanksgiving special. I am Jason, and with me always, my good buddy Pete.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And, you know, we want to start off by saying that several weeks ago, Pete and I talked about, well, what are we going to do about the holidays? Because we obviously want to spend time with our wives, our girlfriends, our family and friends, but we didn't want to forget our listeners that support us week after week after week. So we thought, let's not just not do a show, let's actually do a special show. So we've pulled out all the stops for you for the Thanksgiving special. We have an entire show with our special guest, the one, the only, Jeremy Bullock. And Jeremy has got a lot of really cool stories to tell, and what a pleasure to have him. But before we begin, we've got a special message from the Office of the President of the Hyperspace Official Fan Club. Take it away.
Hello, Star Wars fans. This is Dustin Roberts, a Star Wars Fan Club president, and welcome to the Thanksgiving Holiday Special. Oops, maybe Star Wars and Holiday Special shouldn't be in the same sentence, huh? Anyways, I wanted to take time to tell everyone out there listening that I hope you have a very safe and happy Thanksgiving holiday. I hope that you're enjoying the new Forcecast format here at TheForce.net, and I hope to see you at Celebration 4 in May 2007.
Thank you, Dustin. We appreciate that. It's awfully nice to have.
Always good to hear from the president.
We wanted to have some fireplace crackling in the back behind that, but we just couldn't find the right effect.
The only ones we found were either sounded like popcorn or that he was actually standing in a furnace at the time that he was trying to do it. So we decided to forego the fireside chat sound effect.
But you get the idea. So we should mention that this show, like so many in the past, is sponsored by our good friends at Official Picks. And as a special thank you for a great year, Official Picks is extending the 25% discount to everybody on any photograph purchase. Simply add the photos, limited editions, and ultra picks that you want to your cart and check out to enjoy all the savings. Stock up today for the upcoming holiday season. Get your photos right there at Official Picks. That's officialpicks.com, picks with an X.com. Well, let's just get right to it. We are so lucky to have with us in the cantina the one, the only, Boba Fett himself, Jeremy Bullock. Jeremy, thank you so much for being here on our Thanksgiving special.
Well, that's a pleasure.
Jeremy, I know that you've had a lot of interaction with the fans over the years. You've really been one of the most out there in terms of the stars of the Star Wars films, and always always there with a handshake and an autograph and a smile. We get so many comments from folks that have met you over the years, and it's really, I think they start out Boba Fett fans, and then they definitely end up Jeremy Bullock fans. So, and
I'm just saying it's very nice, but it's not difficult to be nice to the fans, because really I would say 99.9% of fans are so polite, and they're always saying thank you so much for coming all the way out here to meet us. And you know, my wife and I travel around a great deal, and although I'm still working here, to go to an event, and it, to them it's the most important thing in the world, but to us it's just a fantastic weekend, you know, and we have a wonderful time, and the fans are very good and very polite, so it's not difficult to be polite back.
Jeremy, do you know how many events roughly you do a year?
Well, this year not that many, to be quite honest. I'm due to go to America fairly soon, but to be quite honest, I haven't been away for quite some time. And, of course, next year I will be involved probably quite a bit, depending on work, because it's the 30th anniversary.
Right.
Earlier times, 97, 98, 99, around then, I was being asked to go everywhere, including almost someone's front room. They'd say, we'd love you to come and have a cup of tea if you're in the area. And you politely say, well, I'm not exactly going to be flying to Knoxville to have a cup of tea, but it's very kind of you. But it is, it's that. It's either someone's front room or a huge event somewhere in the world, really. So I do feel very fortunate because Star Wars fans know characters like C-3PO, Chewbacca, Darth Vader, R2-D2, etc. But non-real Star Wars fans wouldn't know who the hell Boba Fett is. So to be included with all the guys and be invited to so many different events, I feel very honored.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, and I really believe that next to Darth Vader, I think Boba Fett is probably the most prevalent and most well-known Star Wars villain.
Yeah, well, you're probably right, but if you look at what I'm saying is, non-Star Wars fans, they may have seen the film,
mm-hmm.
would instantly know Darth Vader.
Sure,
they would instantly know R2-D2, but they would, in fact, it happened some years ago. We were all sitting in a restaurant, and the waiters came over and said, "Oh, wow, yeah, could you sign the menus for us? And you know, you're welcome here. It's so great to have you guys here. And wow, Boba Fett, fantastic." You know, and next to me on a table is a group of elderly people who cottoned on to that there was a Star Wars actors here. And this lady said to me, she said, "I'm so sorry to disturb you, but would you mind at all, you know, signing our menus as well and put your character name underneath?" I said, "No, not at all." So I handed it around to Darth Vader, R2-D2, Chewbacca, then to myself, and we all signed it. And I gave it back to the lady, returned to the conversation on our table, and suddenly behind me I heard a voice, "Who the heck is Boba Fett?" Well, that goes to show you, out of all that she knew all the other names.
Right.
Chewbacca. Boba Fett, no. And she pronounced it wrong, and I had to correct her. I said, "It's Boba Fett." But that's why you can have a laugh at yourself, because really, apart from real Star Wars fans, no one actually knows the character. In a way, that's nice, because he's supposed to be a bit of a loner and
right.
and deadly, and he keeps right. himself to himself.
Point taken. One of the things that we really wanted to do, Jeremy, is give the fans an opportunity to hear a little bit more, not just about Boba Fett, but a little bit more about you. And I was doing some research over the weekend, and you've been acting for a long time. You've been acting since
yeah,
you were...
Yeah, well, it's coming up to... It's actually 50 years... In fact, 50 years now.
Wow.
This month.
Well, congratulations.
well, yes, very kind of you. and I actually, what I did is put, recently I put a sort of DVD together, it's a compilation of loads of programs. I've done it to music, or a friend of mine's done it for me, and there's clips from different things, and it's quite nice to have that. Apart from doing a Q&A or a question and answer session at an event,
mm-hmm.
you can say, "Well, look, have a look at this," music comes up, and then people say, "Oh, wow, I remember that," or "I don't remember that, what's that about?" So, instead of just doing straight Q&As, what was it like in the costume? And you say, "Well, it was extremely hot and heavy," which is the normal one.
Right.
But you can then go on to something else. And I think if you're going to events and you may be invited back, I think you're entitled, or not entitled, that's the wrong word, you should give them something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to give an awful lot back, and I think you should say, "Well, look, here's something else." You also give sort of acting lessons. I tend to get people up and go through an acting course, like a workshop. So it's not the same all the time, because Q&As can get quite dull, I think. If you've got 12 actors up there, someone asks a question, "What was it like in the outfit?" Well, at the end of 12 actors saying, "Well, it was extremely hot," that's 50 minutes might have gone by.
Right.
So you'll only get two questions in the session.
Sure.
And I think it's better to split up the actors, maybe have three actors talking about something, and have something different.
Right.
And each time you go, try and change what you're doing. And that seems to work.
Well, can you give us an idea about when you, I mean, you, it says you had started, or at least had your first professional appearance at the age of 12. When did you realize that acting was something that you wanted to pursue?
Well, I think I always talk about that. The first job I had was a commercial for shredded wheat. And the director was so brutal in the way he was, he had to get everything right. And I think he was worried that it was costing a lot of money. And if we went over the amount of hours we were doing, he would be really upset. And after that, and the way he was shouting at me as a 12-year-old, come on, kid, come on, get it right, come on, come on, you time it, time it. And after that, I thought, well, who wants to be in show business if this is how I'm treated? And it was quite a scary moment.
Yeah.
But I think all along I wanted to be a sportsman, and I was going to go to a sports college on a scholarship. But I failed the exam. And looking back on it now, I think somehow on purpose I failed the exam because I wanted to do something else. I wanted to act. I used to love painting. Mm-hmm. And at 9 years old, I was painting backcloth sets at my school because I just loved painting and splashing paint and creating things. And then I used to sing a bit and do funny things. And I've sort of never looked back. Once I went to drama school, I was lucky to work immediately. Literally, I was hardly ever at the drama school because I was whisked off to do a kids' film, adventure thing. And so I still believe that I've been terribly lucky.
Well, in looking at your resume, and at least over at the website, the International Movie Database, you've been acting steadily since it all began. You said yourself almost 50 years ago now. What's the secret to having a steady career as an actor? Is there a secret? Is it luck?
Well, I think that, well, if there is a secret, I believe that if you don't enjoy what you're doing, just don't bother. Just retire or say, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to be an accountant, which is the thought of that. It makes me feel I want to carry on acting forever. The thing is, everything I've done, I've enjoyed. I've been excited about going in the next day. When I go for an interview, I'm terribly excited about it. If I don't get it, I don't crumble on the floor and cry and go, oh, my God, because you say, you know, if you don't get it, your agent said, I'm terribly sorry, it was down between two of you, but you didn't get it. I'm upset for 5 minutes, and I go, I shrug my shoulders, and I said, well, more fool them. If they've missed out on me, they didn't choose me, it's their fault. Mm. And you sort of talk to yourself and then get over that and then prepare yourself for the next interview. But really, I think the secret is, you know, carrying on, is that every project is new and you give 150%. You know, you rehearse and you go through it and hope it all works and people like it. And I just love work and I love being excited by it.
When you look at, you've done a lot of film work, you've done a lot of TV work and stage work as well. Is there one particular that you enjoy more than the other?
Yes, it's a good question. Theatre has to be my favourite. I haven't done theatre for 8 years now, and I'm looking forward to going back. Maybe next year sometime. I mean, I get asked to do an awful lot of plays, but they tend to be plays that I've done before, and I always like to look for something new.
Hmm.
The trouble is, I think, as an actor, if you do a play that you've done a few years ago, and they've asked you, oh, Jeremy, we remember you were in the West End, would you do this play? And you start to think, well, yeah, but if you've done it before, you sort of ease into it quite easily, and there's no challenge there. So I'd like to do something new. But theatre, really, you have that audience which is different every night.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night's probably the most difficult of doing a theatre performance because the husband meets the wife at the theatre. He's been working all day. He's in his business suit. Come on, dear, we're going to the theatre on Friday night. Oh, must I? Yes, no, meet me. I'll come up to town and you'll come straight from work. Now, invariably, the husbands settle down. They're exhausted. They've had a really hard day at work. And they're watching the play, and the play starts, and it's quite gentle. There's no real excitement. And you can see, as a performer, as an actor, you change that the way the play is going with injecting it with pace, because you can almost hear snoring because they're so tired, they're asleep, the husbands. So you have to inject pace, which is wrong, but it livens them up, and they suddenly sit up bolt right. And you just know, hey, we're going to have to wake these guys up because they've had a bad day. And the lovely thing is every performance is different.
Right. Right. In the television work that you've done, have you ever had an opportunity to film something live in front of a TV audience? Or is that something that they don't do too much over there?
No, they do. Certainly with comedy series. I've done lots of... I did 3 years of a comedy series called Agony, where you sit in front of an audience. And the lovely thing is, if they go back and say, let's do that again... The warm-up man has to remind them to laugh again at the same point. If they've seen the thing and it's terribly funny, they go, ah, ha, ha. Well, if they see it again, most people, and myself included, you chuckle to yourself. You don't laugh out loud. So they have to be reminded to laugh again. And if the first laugh is good on the take that the director doesn't like, they'll put that laughter on the take that he does like. Mm-hmm. So playing in front of an audience there is quite fun. So you have a sort of theatrical experience, but it's going to be on television because you have this live audience.
Right. Well, in just some of the things that I learned about you, first of all, you're a veteran of 3 James Bond films. I thought that was exceptionally cool.
That's very nice, Jason, the way you're introducing that. But really, I mean, it's not as I was playing the major villain or anything.
Sure.
I played Q's assistant in 2 films, Smithers. Mm-hmm. And it was just a brief cameo as my arm goes out in one For Your Eyes Only. My arm, they're testing this special thing where my arm is in plaster and it springs back and knocks off a dummy's head and blows up. And then in Octopussy, a similar thing with a fishing rod. And Roger Moore used to come in and say in the scene, Smithers, you know, I said, Commander Bond, and then bang, the explosion would happen. So it's nice, you know, that I did 3 of the films, but it was a very small role.
Sure.
And by the way, I've just seen the new Bond film, which is terrific.
I saw it this weekend myself.
And it's very good. What's that?
I saw it this weekend myself.
You did? Did you enjoy it?
Yes, my wife and I both really, really liked it. I would say that James Bond, the James Bond films, is my second favorite series of movies, next to Star Wars, of course. So it was a thrill when I saw that you had been in them. And you know, I certainly don't want you to downplay it, because how many people can say that they've been in 3 James Bond films? It's
no, that's true. Yes, there is that. But I mean, I'm just watching some of Daniel Craig, my son, who flirted with show business, he's in a series called Robin of Sherwood, and he did a film called The Power of One with Morgan Freeman some years ago. And he played the younger Daniel Craig at a school. So they look fairly similar. And I was saying to him the other day, I said, look, there you are, Robbie, you've got this very good job, which you have now. But I said, you could have been Bond. he just laughed.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a series of young Bond novels that a lot of the Bond fans are really excited about. So maybe, there's hope for your son.
You never know. But no, I think he's got a sensible job. I would never have, you know, I would never say, hey, you know, you can't be an actor. And even my eldest son flirted with it when he was very young. I would never stop them if they really wanted to do it, but it is a tough profession.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, if you don't mind, Jeremy, we could shift into the Star Wars realm of things, since this is the Force Cast.
And, sure.
When were you first aware of this thing called Star Wars?
Well, I think obviously. Everyone was aware of this extraordinary film called Star Wars A New Hope, or Star Wars as we all knew it. And I went to see the film, and when I saw the vision of this ship that went on forever, you know, coming over your head on the screen, you saw everyone looking up, and some people going, oh my goodness gracious. You could audibly, people were going, oh, And it was just an extraordinary film, and you sat and watched this, and I thought it was incredible. I said, there's some strange creatures, and look at, oh, what's that? And you were just trying to, you were trying to take everything in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I believe that you couldn't take everything in, so that's why so many people have seen the film several times, to try and understand everything about it. And I thought that was quite incredible. And to actually go up and be seen for Boba Fett and being told that it was only a few days' work, and then, it, of course, it ends up as 3 or 4 weeks' work, you know, it was quite extraordinary. And when I saw the costume and I put it on and it fitted perfectly, and I thought, well, that was a bonus. And I thought, they're going to ask me to read. Of course, Boba Fett only says 4 lines. They didn't want me to read. And I was working in the theatre while I was filming when I started, and that's rare because most film companies won't want you to work in the theatre because you're not available to work late. So I was terribly lucky. I, you know, got that outfit on, and looking at that outfit every morning, I looked at it and thought, well, this looks quite a cool outfit, and walked onto the set for the first time for George Lucas to look at the costume and think, yeah, that's fine, that's... And walking on the set, most of the heads turned and thought, oh, what's this character? You could see him going, what the hell is this? And walking through, and they just followed me. And that's when I knew that there's something about the character that is quite exciting. And the thing is with Boba Fett, the least you do as an actor, the stronger the character is. It would be better to stand still for 45 minutes without moving than waving your gun about. All right, people see you waving the gun about, but they'll be aware of you standing still, and they'll think, what's the matter with him? Why is he not... He's going to kill... Is he... And it's totally cold, and it's a bit like Clint Eastwood in A Fistful of Dollars. He's a bounty hunter, and he sits back there smoking a cigarette. And you never know what he's going to do. You know he's going to shoot the guys, but when? And it's the same thing with Boba Fett. He's just deadly. You don't cross him, and once he's done it, he explodes his gun, and then it all comes back to calm, and then he just holds his gun and cuddles it, as I used to. And it was just cool. You were almost experimenting. Mm-hmm. Because you had time to do it. I didn't have much dialogue.
Right. And I was going to ask you, how do you prepare to play a role without speaking? I mean, obviously, you want to put certain mannerisms or a certain style of walking, a swagger or whatever. How did you approach the role, and how much did character backstory were you given, if any?
Well, not a lot of character backstory, but Irving Kirshner said, look, this guy is very... very cool. He answers Darth Vader back and gets away with it, and he knows what he wants, you know. But, I used to just look at the costume for a quarter of an hour every morning in the mirror before I went on set. And then I thought, well, this gun's sort of slightly awkward, this Blastech rifle. And I thought, well, how do I do... And then I sort of started to hold the gun in a way, almost cradling it, and tilting my head to one side, and because there was so much about the character that I thought, well, I hope the camera picks it up. I'll just lean this way. But, you know, it was terribly lucky. If you wear a costume like Boba Fett's outfit, you're halfway there. And people say, what was it like? How did you act through the mask? Well, the helmet, if you look at the helmet, it's deadly. It's, you know, samurai warrior, and you're standing there. And it's quite menacing. So really the costume helps to begin with. You know, there's... not much more you need to do. You use the costume.
I was reviewing all your scenes last night, and a couple of them really struck out at me, and I just wanted to bring them up to you. And the phrase "cold steel" kept coming back to me. And there's that one moment where Han is being tortured, and you and Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian, just turn and look at each other. And it's funny because the audience can just read the expression on that mask. It's a really great moment.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, there were lots of moments, and there was, I think the moment when Boba Fett answers Darth Vader back, You know, you just think, well, what's happened in the past? Darth Vader is strong, probably the great villain of all time. There's still something about Boba Fett who can just interrupt and almost say, be careful, Lord Vader. You know, I know your secrets. I mean, I'm thinking ahead.
Sure.
But there's something there that Darth Vader just lets him get on with it. He never threatens him or say, do what you come here for, otherwise you'll be a destroyer. You know, there's none of that.
Right, right.
You know, Boba Fett, it has something on him, I think.
Hmm.
And I believe at some time, Boba Fett and Han Solo flew together.
Hmm.
It must have happened somewhere.
That's...
when I mean, we all see the thing, Boba Fett, where? You know, they haven't seen each other for a while, and I'm sure that in the times where Boba Fett might have been not a good guy, but they might have met. I mean, they're both pirates, they're both, you know, naughty lads, but Han Solo decided to stay on the good side. Boba Fett was just like the bounty and the money.
Hmm.
Plus, he seeks revenge for his father somewhere, so that's interesting. Interesting character.
Absolutely.
Well, we have to get the inevitable costume question out of the way. So we know it was hot and heavy. But more interesting, how long did it take for you to get into the costume and get out of it every single day?
That's a good question. I mean, I had help. I had the dresser, John, who would be fussing about and say, come on, dear, get on with it. It probably took about 20 or 25 minutes to put it on. Less to take it off, but towards the end of filming, especially when I got onto Return of the Jedi, it was quite quick. I could put a lot on myself, but then obviously jetpack and belt had to be tied round. It wasn't one where we say, quick, hurry up, you've got 2 minutes to put it on. No, you couldn't do it in that time, but
mm-hmm.
It got quicker as the more I wore the costume.
There were... we were talking earlier about moments in Empire Strikes Back in particular, and I've always wondered, in the scene where we see Boba Fett, not for the first time, but for the first time on Cloud City, and he's there next to, you're there next to Darth Vader when our heroes come in, and Vader pulls the gun from Han, and he says, we'd be honored if you'd join us, and then the door is shut, and he sits down. It's always bothered me. I've wondered, what in the world did you all sit and talk about after that?
That's a good point. I don't know. I just, I think I just shut off and let them get on with it. I was thinking of more exciting things, like, where am I going to drink in the cantina bar that evening?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine them all sitting down and having a dinner or something together.
I know. Especially through those masks.
Right.
I mean, that's the lovely thing about the mask. You could play the scene, and it doesn't matter what you say, because it's going to be dubbed on afterwards, and, you know, you could say Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, and that would fit in with, what if he doesn't survive? I mean, you could do both. I mean, no one would know. Now, no one had a clue what I was saying. And at times when you felt sprightly and you thought, well, it's been a really good day, you could almost, with Darth Vader talking to you, and I thought, well, I don't know what he's talking about, you could say anything as long as it fitted in. But you did the thing is, it's a question of you concentrate throughout the day, because the days were long. But very exciting. It was a lovely set to join very early in the morning, and I really look forward to every day.
You mentioned that they really couldn't hear what you were saying. Did you actually read the lines of dialogue while you were doing the scenes, or?
Oh, yes. I mean, what you do is you knew the lines you had. You used to get a page a day, and you knew exactly what you had to do. I remember that one time, which I've let people know recently, when we were doing the scene where I had to say, put Captain Solo in the cargo hold. Well, on the day, they said, right, stand by, action. And I turned to the Imperial officer and said, put Captain Cargo in the Solo hold. Hello, I've made a mistake. And I thought, shall I put my hand up? Because I thought, no, I can't. I mean, it got four lines. I can't possibly have made a mistake. But it didn't matter. No one knew, because it fits in. I mean, it doesn't matter what I said. It actually fitted in. And you don't exaggerate your head movements when you talk to say, hello, look, I'm talking.
Right.
You stand still. So it was, and it just made me laugh. And I'm glad I didn't own up, because they would have said, what is wrong with this person? He's got four lines and he keeps mucking them up. So, you know, that funny, put Captain Solo in, put Captain Cargo.
Well, you just created a new character there.
What's that?
Said you just created a new character, Captain Cargo.
Oh. That's like Captain Cargo.
Maybe you were trying to say Captain Colton that you played in episode 3.
Yeah, and I've just realized that they've given him, or whoever has given Captain Colton a first name. And it's sort of part of my full name. His name is Jeremoch.
Oh, very cool.
Which is part of, it's like Jerem and then cut off Jeremy and Bullock.
Hmm.
So it's Jeremoch.
And it sounds like a very Star Wars name, too.
Yeah, it is. So I'm now called Jeremoch Colton. And it's quite a nice little thing for fans to say. I said, right, who knows what my first name is Captain Colton in Revenge of the Sith? And no one knows. So it's a very good question. But yeah. Now I've told everybody that.
Now they'll all know. They'll all know. Yeah. As you look back at the Empire shoot, Jeremy, is there any sequences that were particularly difficult? I know I've actually read some things about the sequence with Han being frozen in carbonite, that there was some difficulty there on the set with Harrison Ford in that line, the exchange between he and Carrie Fisher, the "I love you, I know," when that came about. Do you happen to remember that day?
I remember the days, because it was the hottest place you could be, with steam coming up through the floor. And the backs of your legs feeling really burnt. And then the final, "I love you, I know." I mean, it was such a fabulous line. I don't even remember them saying that because, you know, I was quite a distance away and you couldn't hear.
Right.
And it was difficult enough to think, well, what do I say? Because Darth Vader is next to me and I'm thinking, has he finished talking? Do I say anything now? And it was such a hot set. But I didn't even remember him saying, you know, "I love you, I know." Okay. I mean, it's one of the great lines in cinema.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Or great two lines in cinema.
And there are moments when you look at the original films that just beautifully echo things that came later in the prequels. And there's one that involved you and Darth Vader when you raise your gun to shoot Chewbacca and he pushes your arm down. Pushes the gun down, and I've always it seems like it really fits in well. Was there any direction or explanation as to why that happened, or was that originally in the script?
No, I think it's part of the script, and you say, right, you pull your gun up, and it was just slapped down by Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, my thought was, because when I found out that around my shoulder I had Wookiee scalps, you know, the braided hair,
right,
that Boba Fett carries is part of a Wookiee. And I'm thinking, is he after another Wookiee braid? You know, get rid of Chewbacca. But something, I don't know what it is. Was Boba Fett after Chewbacca because of something that happened in the past with Han Solo? I don't know.
Hmm.
Very, very interesting. Lots of things, and that's what's so good about the Star Wars films. People have something to talk about. They say, why did you do that? Or I wish he'd done this. So there's a discussion about, I don't understand why this character did that, and I wish he hadn't done that, that was wrong. And I think with Revenge of the Sith, the last film, George Lucas has given a lot of the older fans a darker story. So he's virtually saying, well, there you are. It's a 12A rating. It's not a U anymore. So that's what you wanted. So you've got
right.
The final film what you wanted.
When we kind of fast forward to Return of the Jedi, you had a lot to do in the Jabba's Palace sequence. How difficult was that with all the puppeteering, the puppet work that was going on? Was it extraordinarily difficult, or how did it go?
No, it wasn't difficult. The days were long. We were there for several days. I mean, 5-6 days. And I didn't move. I stood next to Jabba the Hutt, maybe, really like a sort of a secret bodyguard.
Right.
KGB, you know, something like that. And he's, and I used to stand there and I used to look at Jabba the Hutt. And literally for fun, I used to say, because he was sort of like a big lump. It wasn't being operated. And I stood up there and I used to say, "So, Jabba, did you go out last night to any nightclubs or the cinema or what do you do?" You know, just to relieve the boredom.
Right.
And it was just, I mean, Jabba the Hutt was such a great creation. And the set was perfect because it was dank. It was very damp, a real damp feeling about the set. And it was wonderful. I mean, the whole atmosphere was fantastic. You had the puppeteers, you had acrobats, you had the little guys, giants. I mean, you had everybody there. And it was just, you know, an exciting time. It was fantastic.
Jeremy, were you able to do any of the stunt work on the skiff fight, the sequence?
No, I mean, all the stunt stuff was done by, and I can't remember his name, whether it was Glenn Randall, the American stuntman, or whether he was the coordinator, I can't remember. No, but all the stunt stuff was done by a stuntman, mainly because, it was dangerous.
Sure.
You know, that's what the guy, and they are terrific at it. They're trained so well. You know, you learn at drama school to be a fencer, and I became a reasonable sword fighter when I was at drama school, and you learn how to roll over and punch and, you know, the normal things. I rode a horse when I was very young. And the silly thing is, in nearly 50 years, I've ridden a horse twice in a film. In fencing, I've used it twice. You know, so you're ready to do it, but, I just haven't used it.
They didn't teach you to use a rocket pack in the drama school.
No, in the drama school, you just go and fill up with green petrol, unleaded, and just fly around the universe. Really. So that you have to rehearse that. That's not easy.
I noticed when I was reviewing some of the sequences, for all the fact that Boba Fett is really hunting Han Solo, you get a couple of good shots at Luke Skywalker too. You're shooting at him on Cloud City, and then of course the rappelling rope that comes out of the Gov Gauntlet on the skiff, and I'd say you get shots at him.
What I found was, people always ask, "Oh, you shouldn't have died then in the Sarlacc pit. Oh, it's terrible. You know, you should have." And I always think, well, that's filming. You know, if I'd written the script, I would have been in it all the way through and have survived.
Right.
Of course I would. You know, it's, in a way, it makes the character much stronger, the way he gets rid of Boba Fett. You have people, no, don't let him go, you know. So in a way, it's quite good, because then people, you know, like the character a great deal, because he's, you know, he suddenly becomes the favorite guy.
Right.
Now, did you get to keep anything from the film? Did you get to keep any of the helmets?
No, I wish I'd pinched it. I really do. I wish I'd thieved it when I look back now. Because I've got, you know, I've collected Boba Fett memorabilia over the years. But, I mean, I'd love to have had the original costume. And maybe in the future I might just pick up the phone and say, "Look, George, do you really want the outfit? Because it'd be lovely to have here as a memento." But I think the answer would be, say, "Well, thank you, Jeremy." And he'd just laugh, meaning, "No, you can't."
Jeremy, how did the cameo in Episode 3 come about?
Well, that was extraordinary. I mean, my wife and I were literally on our way to Italy. Well, we were landing in Italy, and we were going to visit my son and his family, who had been living there for a couple of years. And we had the mobile phone. I remember saying to my wife, Maureen, why have we got the mobile phone? You know, it's a break. They know where we live. They know my son's telephone number. Anyway, we had the mobile phone. And literally, as we arrived for a week, literally at their door, the phone went. And it was Rick McCullum saying, "Jeremy, where are you?" I said, "Well, I'm in Italy at the moment, having a holiday." He said, "When are you back in England?" Because they were coming back to Shepperton Studios to reshoot stuff and do bits. And he just said, you know, just this role, it's a very short little cameo, a couple of lines, and know, it'd be nice for you to do it. And so it was very nice, just totally out of the blue. They obviously know I don't live very far from Shepparton. But to be included like that was an absolute joy.
And you had a great scene there with, my goodness, Ewan McGregor and...
Oh, yes. And it's funny enough, the first time I've met Ewan. And,
is that right?
We had a great time just chatting. I mean, I was just chatting about nothing special and a lovely day.
And it's great because you walk on the set as Boba Fett, you know, the man that played Boba Fett, to all, you know, to someone like Ewan McGregor, who, like us, we grew up with these films. It was such a part of our childhood. So, you know, you walk on the set and he's Ewan McGregor, but you're Boba Fett.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is nice. I mean, he was very funny. We were just chatting about different films and things. And
sure.
The cameraman I knew from years ago, and a lot of the crew I knew, and they just said, oh, wow, you know, you, God, you played the part. And, oh. And even Hayden Christensen, who I met at the premiere, just said, he was so lovely, he's such a nice guy, and he just said, oh, God, you're my favorite character, man. Oh, gee whiz, I can't believe it. So you do get that, and I think that's one of the nice things about having your face covered in a mask and a costume, when people say, hey, Mr. Bullock, have I ever told you you're my favorite character? I said, well, you say that to everybody, and all the time, no, I really mean, oh, it's... So really, it's nice... it's nice to know. I mean, my agent here sort of is not really a Star Wars fan. When I say to them, well, look, you know, I've just been out to America and I did this. They said, what for? You didn't even see your face. Why do they want to see you? I said, well, they want to see Boba Fett. They said, well, they don't want to see Jeremy Bullock because they'd rather not see your face. I said, well, exactly. That's the way things go.
Now, Jeremy, being the fact that you were in Episodes 3, Episodes 5, and Episodes 6, there's three different directors there, George Lucas, Irvin Kershner, and Richard Marquand, was the atmosphere on the sets of those three films pretty comparable, pretty similar, or did they all have sort of a different flavor?
No, that's a good question again. I think all the films have the same atmosphere. There's something about, hello, I'm dressed up in a funny outfit, and I'm flying a ship or something. With Irving Kershner, there was an awful lot going on. Very good director, and we were all doing bits. And Richard Marquand, I knew before, funnily enough, the Star Wars, and he said, oh, Jeremy, you know, I saw the last film. Well, you know, I don't have to tell you what I want. There's a little bits here and there, but you know the character of Boba Fett because you've done the last film. But you still took his direction quite rightly. Mm-hmm. And then the latest one was just spending a day in Revenge of the Sith. And George would just say, was so lovely. I hadn't seen him for a while. And he just said, hi, Jeremy, welcome. This is not huge, but it's lovely to have you here. And that made me feel really good.
And
it was just gentle, you know, a very gentle scene. It wasn't... You know, there's sure. No big fighting, and I was a good guy for a change.
Right. And what kind of a presence did George Lucas have on the sets of Empire and Jedi? Was he physically there, or...?
Yes, he was. No, he was physically there. He would come in, and it's the first time probably I've seen a director or overall... No, he wasn't directing then, but... He was editing in his mind. You could see a screen. He would be watching. He'd come onto the set a lot. But he's very calming. Mm. You know, there's something about him. He's very calming and, in a way, a little shy, but then we all are. I was shy when I first started acting. And we hide behind costumes. We hide behind lots of different things. But he's just a very charming man and is always, you know, just very pleasant with everybody. And there's something, that calming influence that he has, means that everyone else is running around like headless chickens. Oh, come on, we've got to get this shot in. It's 5:30. Come on, everybody. He would say, okay, let's go, and action. And it's just gently. You don't feel flustered.
Hmm.
And if you make a mistake, you don't think, oh, my goodness, what have I done? I've made a mistake. I've forgotten the line or something. Right. It's just done to say, okay, let's go once more. You know, there's no panic.
Hmm.
You know, and that's, he sort of, pass that on to actors. You could have an actor, I mean, I knew him and I'd worked with him before, but you could have an actor coming in for one line And that's probably the most difficult thing to do. You could say, ah, General, I've arrived. And, you know, if they'd make a mistake, ah, General, I've, sorry. Let's do it again. I mean, they could feel terribly nervous, but George sure. would put them immediately at ease. Let's go again. Okay, don't worry about, you know. So immediately, the sort of relaxing, calming influence of him just comes across.
Right.
Okay, now fast-forwarding even further into the future, we talked a couple weeks ago about the series Star Hike that was being previewed on YouTube and everything like that. What's the status on that, and can you give us any updates?
Well, it's very interesting because you never think, here we go. There's a certain channel, and I don't know it because no one's telling me, that's very interested in doing this, and we've shot 6 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Now, the first episode has been seen. We had a sort of little run of it a couple of weeks ago. And this weekend, up in Birmingham, some of the cast, or 3 of the cast will be there, plus the producer, director, and they're going to show a screening of the episode again. But the company that would like it or are interested are still saying, we'd like to see another episode cut together. And that's because we shot 6 episodes. We didn't just do a pilot, which is the normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
The company wanted to shoot 6 episodes while they had the set, so they didn't have to take it down and reset it. So that's the more difficult route, to have 6 episodes to sell to a channel.
Right.
So we're still waiting. So we'll know something fairly soon, and we just hope. But I just thank all the people that have, you know, got on, because I said, get on to YouTube or get on to Google and have a little clip of the, you know, of Star Hike. So it's in the lap of God. You know, sometimes things happen, sometimes don't. And, you know, like I said right at the beginning, if you don't get a part, you go, oh, well, more fool them. You know, they're silly. They're missing out. And it's the same with this. You know, if they don't see it, I think they'll miss out on something quite funny.
Well, we did actually hop on there, and we did ask everybody on the show, and it looks very funny. We definitely hope it gets picked up because in the United States as well, because I think it'll be something that's very funny. It's got a lot of elements of just several different types of things that'll make it very funny and very interesting.
I mean, it is completely off the wall. I mean, the part that I play, Dr. Stryker, is completely mad. I mean, he shouldn't be allowed to treat anybody at all. He's always got a pretty nurse on hand, but he's completely mad. My hair is different in every episode. It's all over the place, you know. So, you know, we hope. I mean, and you just keep backing it and supporting it, and if it doesn't happen, you just say, oh, well, and then maybe, you know, if it didn't happen, then in a few years' time, it would be, all 6 episodes would be knitted together, and then it might suddenly people say, oh, this was the thing that was going to, and then suddenly it's a hit.
Right.
So you never know. You can never tell.
Well, Jeremy, since this is actually our Thanksgiving special, typically we
I
do.
Know.
And
Thanksgiving, I wish I was there.
Well, what we have done is we've asked our listeners to send us an email. They knew that you were coming on the show, and said if you had a question for Jeremy, send it to us. And we got a great response. We also told folks to, since it is a Thanksgiving special, to tell us what they're thankful for. And this email comes from Kevin Nelson. And he says, I wanted to say that I'm thankful for my family and friends. They're the ones who keep me going. And I'm also thankful for George Lucas, who gave us all this gift that we call Star Wars. And he has a question for you, Jeremy.
Okay.
Kevin says, I've read that Jeremy will be making a cameo appearance in the upcoming fan film Secrets of the Rebellion. What led to his decision to this? I'm really looking forward to seeing it when it's completed.
Yeah, well, that's true. I was in Canada earlier this year, and they asked me, would I come along and help out with this? And, you know, hopefully this is going to raise a lot of money for charity. And I'm going to sign the costume I wore. It's a very brief role.
Hmm.
And I just think, you know, a lot of fan films, what people are doing now is quite incredible. I mean, they're almost virtually professional. and it's just a tribute to Star Wars. And I've always said, you know, as long as, you know, the film is not going to be made for profit, then obviously then I'd give my services to do a role coming in and doing it for nothing to help out. And, you know, this is the future. This is the future of new directors, new cameramen, new scriptwriters, all through George Lucas, who wrote this incredible series of films. And suddenly you've got people who felt out of it at college. They didn't really want to do maths. They didn't really want to do Italian. Now they're working probably at ILM, or they're creating something, you know, to do from Star Wars, you know, and it's created lots of very clever people. When I see people who make costumes, like a Boba Fett costume, it's taken me 9 months to make this. It's a perfect replica. Yeah. And that's a tribute to George Lucas.
Mm-hmm. We have
so
a,
all I can say is happy Thanksgiving, and I wish I was there sampling that wonderful food and a decent... Well, you can't have a decent bottle of beer in America. That's impossible. Well, maybe the odds. Sorry, I'm sorry to say that, but, you know, when I come home to England from America, the first thing I do is just have a half a bottle of proper beer.
Well, we'll try and make sure we get some imported on hand
steaks.
For you.
No, you have wonderful steaks there and very good wine, but the beer, no, not yet.
No, not yet. Well, we do have a bunch more, so we're going to try and get through some of these. Our next one comes from Mike Barrick, who incidentally is thankful for his son, 7-month-old son, Landon, whose name incidentally comes from him wanting his wife to name their son Lando, but they compromised on Landon. But his question is,
well, that's okay.
His question is, do you follow the evolution of your character's history throughout the expanded universe, and especially with Boba Fett turning up in Bloodlines and A Practical Man as of late?
Well, I keep abreast of what's going on, mainly the sort of comics. People say, do you read the books? And I said, well, sort of, but not... obviously, I need to know sometimes an awful lot more than I do know about Boba Fett, because when someone asks me a question, especially if that person is 12 years old and is as bright as a button, said, Mr. Bullock, when you use the Blastec 3457735 rifle, is it true it fires off 13 shots? You know, then the simplest thing to do is to have a pause and say, I can't answer that question because it's classified information. And that's the best way to get out of it. But that's the lovely thing is you. I know a lot about the character. You know, you read a new comic or a new book and you go, ooh. But I'm not absolutely into the whole thing of reading every single book. But I do keep up with what's going on.
Well, like I said, we've got just a couple more questions here. This comes from somebody you know. A good friend of ours, Dustin Roberts. And
Dustin Roberts just got married.
Yes, he did. And here's his question to you. He says, hi, Jeremy. How many times do you think you've signed your name?
How many times have I signed my name? That's a very good question. Again, that's classified.
All right.
I would think, quite a few thousand, yes. Quite a few thousand.
Oh, absolutely, I'm sure.
And all on checks. No, sorry.
What is often the reaction when you tell people you play Boba Fett, people that haven't heard of you, or, you know, that may have just heard of the character, and you were the guy behind the mask? What reaction do you usually get?
It's quite funny. You get different reactions. I was going for a party, through, I think, New Jersey. And I was invited to this party, and, you know, it was just like a big Star Wars. I think it was 25th anniversary. And I was coming in and going through immigration, and they said, put your name there, Gary. What are you doing here, you know? And I know they have to be fairly, you know, sharp. And I said, well, I'm actually coming in, this is a party, celebrate 25 years, 25th anniversary party. Oh, 25th anniversary? Whose anniversary is it? Is it a wedding? And he was just asking me questions at immigration. I said, no, funny enough, it's Star Wars, 25 years. Oh, yeah? What's that? What do you mean, Star Wars? You mean the movies? I said, well, yes, the movies. And he was quite sharp. And he said, well, what are you coming in for? I said, well, I was invited to come in and celebrate, have a few terrible, dodgy American beers and, you know, have a really nice time, you know, celebrating Star Wars after 25 years. Well, why do they invite you? I said, well, because I was involved with the original three films. Involved in what way? I said, well, I played a character in the films. Well, what character did you play? And I said, well, I played the character of Boba Fett. And there was this poor, you're not kidding. Oh, no. Hey, John. And he called over to someone else. I got Boba Fett right standing right here. And suddenly all the lines were, you know, increasing. Because he then wanted to know all about Boba Fett. And I showed him my watch that had a Boba Fett head on it. And, you know, I said, well, and I suddenly felt terrible because people were still lining up behind me. But he was doing his job very efficiently and very absolute. And then suddenly you could mention the name Boba Fett and he completely went to jelly for 5 seconds. And it's just a wonderful reaction to see that. I thought that really made my weekend.
Absolutely. Looking at these questions, this is from James Everett. He says, when you came to Southampton, you signed a photo of yourself in the Boba Fett costume. Do you enjoy the atmosphere and talking to the fans when you're at a place signing photos?
Yeah, I think the most important thing, if you don't like the traveling or if you don't like going to different events, then you shouldn't do it because people will soon know that you don't really want to be there. And I can remember the Southampton event. And, you know, fans all around the world are fantastic. The 501st group, the garrisons all around the world who do so much for charity, always make every event when they turn up as a stormtrooper, Boba Fett, Darth Vader, whatever character they do. You know, the fans, I think, have been just incredible. And it's the thing, as I go back to what I said earlier on, how polite people can be. It's just incredible.
Okay, and this is actually one that I'm fairly interested in myself. This one comes from Ryan. And you had mentioned that you do collect the merchandise. Do you have a favorite piece that you enjoy or something that really sticks out?
There's a couple of pieces. I have a pewter, quite a big figure of Boba Fett pewter, which is lovely, the compulsion one of Boba Fett, and also a bronze statue, which is only 15 inches high, and a Randy Byrne sculpture, and that's a beautiful piece. But all the stuff I've got, sort of, some of it's unusual. I have a piece made out of one bit of wood. It's slightly off. It's not perfect, but that's what makes it unique. It's just beautifully carved.
Are a lot of these things that fans have given you?
Some people, sometimes fans give it to me. sometimes I buy stuff. If I see something and I think, oh, I've got to get that, I sort of try and haggle like her. I said, oh, yes, can I have that, please? And what can I do a deal, you know, like anybody does?
Right.
So I sort of collect stuff. I've got a few watches and Boba Fett tie, Boba Fett towel, you know, silly things like that. That's when one of my sons says, Dad, you're pathetic. This is so awful. What are you doing? I said, I'm collecting.
Do you
a deal with somebody at an event. You give them a couple of pictures and they say, well, I'll knock off $10 for this. And then you get stuff given to you from different people.
Have you ever seen something that you wanted and went up to them and just said, do you know who I am?
No,
and seen if they would give it to you?
I start chatting. I say, will you give me any sort of discount on this? And they'll say, well, I can't do that. I'm terribly sorry. I said, well, you're going to have to give me a discount. My name is Boba Fett. Oh, well, in that case, you know, so we do, you know, you have a bit of a laugh. It's nice that you can get the stuff and buy the stuff and do deals. And then I'm very lucky I do get given a lot as well. So I made quite a collection there.
Well, Jeremy, fans wanting to know more about you, I understand they can do so. You do have an autobiography that you've written?
Well, I've got an autobiography called Flying Solo, which has two meanings. I mean, flying solo means I'm flying solo to Jabba the Hutt. Mm. Also, flying solo is a term we use here in England as an actor. You've finished your drama training. You're on your own now. You're flying solo. And you're always flying solo. Whatever you do, you're up. It's up to you what you do with your career. And I decided to do it, and it took me 4 years to write. And I decided to do it. It was one American Star Wars fan said, oh, Mr. Bullock, you ought to write a book. You've done so much work. So 10% of the book is Star Wars, and the rest is really my career over all the years and different things I had to do, different jobs I had to do to keep going. Because, you know, people are out of work. Sometimes you're lucky if you work 365 days a year, but that just doesn't happen.
Right.
And I decided to make it a special book in a slipcase, limited to 2,000 copies, and it's doing very well. I mean, it's very difficult because I'm financing it myself. It doesn't go into shops,
right?
You know, there are no shop signings. It's done at events or through my website, jeremybullock.com, and it's a fun book, but it is a collector's item. It's not a paperback that you just throw in the waste paper basket after you've.
No, I've seen the photos.
Up.
It's a beautiful book. It's got a slip case, and I was kind of wondering if maybe those pages were genuine Wookiee trees that you chopped down yourself. And
well, you're absolutely right. All the pages for the books is made out of Wookiee trees. Well, you have to, you know.
For sure,
you have to.
And the Wookiee leather land. Maybe the leather binding is Jedi belts that you took after you slayed a few of them.
God, how did you know that? you know more than me.
Well, Jeremy, do you have any? Now, this podcast, of course, goes all over the world. In fact, Pete and I were just looking at some of our statistics today, and it just blows us away. We've got listeners in the Philippines, we've got listeners in Israel, we've got just listeners all over the world. A lot in Australia and the UK, of course. Any appearances coming up in the next few months or into next year?
Well, I'm doing a sort of. Virtually, it's like a charity event. It's one day on the the 2nd of December, not far, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So that people can look on to my website, jeremybullock.com, and see the exact address and where it's taking place. I actually can't say where I am off the top of my head. And then the following weekend, which is around about 10th, 11th of December, I shall be in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace Forum, the shops there. And that, again, is on my website. And that'll be fun, because Maureen and I are going to go for a bit of a break and try and see a couple of shows. And I might even have a gamble, because Boba Fett does that. He likes the odd gamble, so I'm going to do that.
Well, since this is our Thanksgiving show, I want to say a huge thank you on behalf of all Star Wars fans for you being so generous, so kind, and so giving of your time with fans, particularly in an industry where people sometimes get cynical and jaded. We've just had so many Jeremy encounters that people have told us about, and we're fortunate to have had one ourselves here. So thank you so much for all you do for the fans.
Absolute pleasure. Well, thanks. Thanks for calling me, and I wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. Obviously, our Thanksgiving will be Christmas, and we are sharing it with my three sons. We're having separate Christmases, one in Ireland, one here in London, and then we're going to New Year's Eve to Italy. So, I mean, we share it about, so that will be our Thanksgiving, but lovely, we'll have three different meals.
Absolutely. Well, have you and your family have a great holiday season.
Thanks very much indeed, Jason.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy, so much.
Take care, guys.
You too, sir. Wow. Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett, in our cantina.
Hasn't even worn off yet.
Well, I think it's only fitting. We did ask our listeners to email us with what they're thankful for, and I had mentioned some of the things that I'm thankful for. We were talking to Jeremy just a little bit ago, but I do want to say I am thankful for my family. My friends, I'm thankful to you, my friend, or for you, I should say. Always am glad that I'm not doing this alone. And thankful to all our listeners. And I do want to extend the best and happiest of Thanksgivings to each and every one of you.
I as well am thankful for you, my friend, and as well my family and friends and the tremendous support group that I've got around me. And I'm also very thankful to everyone out there at theforce.net who took a chance on two guys from the Midwest to come out and have a podcast. And it's been a great ride so far, and many happy returns to all of us and hopefully to all of our listeners out there. So thanks to everybody out there that is making this possible for us, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Well, there you got it. Our Thanksgiving special in the can. We'll be back next week with another regular episode of the Forest Cast. But until then, you can just keep replaying this one to satisfy your Forest Cast cravings.
And of course, we always love hearing from you, and you can contest us in several different ways. You can email us at podcast@theforce.net. You can leave us a voicemail by dialing 330-871-4TFN, or if you're on Skype, username ForceCast. And always check out our forums for updated information on everything that we've got going on here at the ForceCast.
So thank you for joining us. Happy Thanksgiving. And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
Oh, let's hear it one more time.
Do the mashed potato, do the candied yam, do the funky turkey, cause it's time to jam. If you don't wanna dance, baby, that's alright. Do some non-stop shopping, work up an appetite. Make your Thanksgiving one long meal, cause the more you eat, the more grateful you are gonna feel.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.